Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. Thank you for listening again on this lovely Thursday. I'm Ben. He's Jordan. The last day of offensive line week. Jordan, how you feeling, man?
We made it, man. And a lot of people don't like to give offensive line credit, but I actually like, or I enjoy watching offensive line. And I know everybody says it is boring to watch and this is sometimes hard to watch, but I actually enjoy it.
You know what I will say for watching offensive linemen is when you turn on a wide receiver or a corner's cut-up, you don't know the quality of reps you're going to be getting, how often they're going to get targeted. Like, you can, like, look up, like, you know, their stat line for that game. Like, all right, they're clearly going to get some targets, or maybe they weren't focused on. But you don't know how quality those reps are going to be. And you also, like, while you're watching it, you don't know if you're going to get those, like, six, seven just boring reps in a row where you're, like, just totally, like, you mentally get disengaged. Offensive line is a good cut-up because every rep is going to matter. It's going to tell you something, and you always know they're going to be an active part of the play. So it's like, to me, it's an easier tape watch because I don't get distracted during the lull period. It's like I'm always locked in. You know what I mean?
Right. And like you said, you have no idea what happened in that game. I mean, you could look if a running back has 100 or 200 rushing yards, and maybe the offensive line didn't play well that game, that particular guy didn't play well. So them not having an actual stat line, I think it makes it more intriguing.
Yeah. Now, that being said, and we were just chatting about this in the pre-show, man, four games of a wide receiver is much faster than four games of an offensive lineman. I'll tell you, you get a lot more reps. But hopefully that means we're able to talk about these guys well. And yeah, for those of you who don't know, just jumping on the pod, the last 3 days, some other 2020 NFL draft relevant offensive linemen, mostly seniors, a couple of underclassmen. I believe in this group we have all seniors. I'm not positive. Maybe one underclassman. But it's three Pac-12, one SEC today. Dealer's choice, Jordan. Last time I gave you the choice of four guys, or two guys. Today I want to give you the choice of all four so you could really start with what you like the best. Who do you want to talk about?
Let's go with Darrell Williams. And I don't think he's the best, but maybe he probably was the most exciting, I should say, or the most intriguing, I would say. But he started 25 of 32 games at left guard of the past 3 years there. He's a senior this year upcoming. So what I loved about him was he has that big barrel-y frame that you love to see from some of those interior guys. I thought his anchor was really good as far as his upper body strength. He has the ability to reset and reposition his hands. And the best way to describe it with his anchor is that his body goes into like a scorpion-like shape.
Yeah.
When he's using his upper body, just because his anchor is so good. And he has that naturally bendy back to where he can use his upper body strength. So I really like that about him. Some things I did not like was he really struggles playing through the echo of the whistle, and he becomes a bit of a play watcher. That's something I didn't really like about him. His pad level can get high from time to time, and he can't get caught in la-la land, meaning that he does become a bit of a play watcher like I alluded to earlier. So just some effort things with him. But as far as his weaknesses, I think most of them are coachable, so that makes me very intrigued with him.
Yeah, I will say, like, weaknesses coachable, whether or not. To me, I think that athletically this is just a limited guy. And obviously you're not really ever going to be able to coach that out. When you see him on the hoof, when you see him, because Mississippi State, you know, when Williams was recruited, they were running a Dan Mullen style of spread. And then all of a sudden, you get Joe Moorhead in the building. And Moorhead wants his guards to be able to pull, wrap, climb, you know. And you did climbing with Mullen for sure. There was a lot of zone stuff going on there. But the pulling and the wrapping, I think, which you get occasionally for Williams, just kind of exposes the fact that he's not necessarily explosive. He's not super nimble. I think he's a little bit stiff. But it is surprising. I agree with you in the sense that that anchor is really exciting. And, yeah, he has that kind of blowback to him where, you know, somebody engages his upper body and he leans it back, but he's able to hold it, which is a lot of lower body and core strength. And that's the key area for offensive linemen. You got to be strong in the lower body, strong on the core, which I think is great. I also thought, I don't know what you thought, really smart player. Him and Elton Jenkins playing next to each other. And I liked – do you like Elton Jenkins last year?
I did. And he's a guy – another guy that his film was kind of boring, but he just stayed in front of everybody. And he did the same thing at the Senior Bowl. I thought he signed really well at the Senior Bowl too.
Yeah, I was a big fan of Elton Jenkins coming out. I was one of the highest guys on staff on him. And I like Williams for a lot of the similar reasons in the sense of when they play next to each other, there's clearly a good communication there. And Williams knows how to identify twists pre-snap and post-snap. I think you saw him call out blitzers really, really well and then identify those games. And that really helps you when you're an interior guy not get put out of position. So very strong. He was rarely outside of where he could be. Play watching, I might have had an issue with it if I didn't watch one of our other offensive linemen before him, who I think is a really bad play watcher. And we'll see if you know who I'm talking about on that one. But, you know, I thought powerful dude top to bottom, really impressed with the lower half power. I just think athletically he's a little bit of a weaker guy, but the anchor is good. And so I'm going to like Williams the same way I like Jenkins. And I was able to peep Williams a little bit before this film review because I was watching Jenkins, and obviously you see 74 right next to him. But yeah, let's go to that play watcher. Let's get one of these next guys out of the way. I don't know if you had the same issues I had with Cole Cabral's film out of Arizona State. Yes. But Cabral is just not very interested in – there's looking for work, and then there's Cole Cabral, which is just not – he stays in his lane, which as a center, you're very frequently, and we talked about this on an earlier pod, going to be uncovered. And so if you've got the opportunity to plaster a guy, I really want you to plaster a guy. Cabral was a rotational player in his first year. Left tackle for his sophomore season. Now he's moved into center, and he's one of these guys that I think he starts for a long time, and the running game becomes good, and people just say, all right, so now we got to pay attention to Cole Cabral. And I just watch him, and I just see nothing very exciting to me. I see, again, we've got another taller body. He's 6'5". I think he really struggles to get underneath guys. Doesn't play with a ton of knee bend. Doesn't play with a ton of agility. I think he's regularly displaced at the line of scrimmage. I mean, and we're talking like, you know, snap hand stuff for centers. He regularly loses first contact, loses the initial strike with his pads, and he does not have the power or the balance to recover. And so, I mean, I just see him giving up a lot of displacement early. So I was not a big fan of Cole Cabral's film. He's probably my least favorite of the four that we watched today.
Yeah, and I'm right there with you. And I had a lot of the same sentiments. So pad level was the first thing that I wrote down. Mm-hmm. And then the second thing was he leaves guys out to dry. Yeah. And that's exactly what you were talking about. And he's another guy that just gets caught in la-la land, and he just looks around and play watches, and I just absolutely hate to see that from an offensive lineman, because you want a lineman that plays through the whistle no matter what, just because they have that nasty demeanor. You want them protecting your quarterback or just being nasty in a run game aspect, and he just doesn't have that. And I thought he looked out of place at center last year because he has the previous experience at left tackle. I actually thought it was better at left tackle in 2017. I don't understand why they transitioned him inside. I'm not sure exactly who their tackles are. I know Zach Robertson is one guy that they are very high on. He's playing right tackle for them, but I'm not sure why they transitioned him away from that left tackle spot, and I think he's much better there. And maybe they had a huge need at center, and they just kept him there. So we'll see if he does end up staying at that center spot, but I think he's a tackle, definitely.
Yeah, and it's interesting because we're watching a lot of interior guys who are just flat tall. I mean, so we have Nick Harris a little bit later. He's short and squatty. He's built like a fridge. But Cole Cabral is 6'5". Hanson was 6'4". Williams is 6'2". That's fine. Lemieux was 6'4". How tall is Biotis? I don't remember how tall Biotis is.
He was 6'3".
He's right. We got some tall. I mean, obviously, the tackle class is huge like we've been talking about. But this goes back to something I've been talking about in terms of recruiting and when – you're looking, you know, we're seeing so many more small school offensive linemen end up at the NFL draft and entering the NFL. And what it comes down to is offensive linemen just aren't developed at the college level. You just do not have the practice time and the coaching time to really take these athletes and make them into something that's known as a strong commodity and is polished. And that's why, like, when we find a guy like a Biotis, we get so excited because he seems so well-rounded and so technically sound. So accordingly, like when we're talking about the guys who we know the NFL is interested in, it's just the big bodies and the fast bodies, you know, and then you're seeing now bigger and bigger interior offensive guys. I do have a question about Cabral. You're an ex-college quarterback. I don't know if you'll know this. Yeah. He snapped. Well, I don't know if this matters at all. He snapped from the tail of the ball, right? You know what I'm talking about? Like, he didn't grab the nose. I saw him miss a couple times. Is that technique typically less accurate? Like, what's the difference there?
So some guys just really can't, like, spin the ball back, and they have to put their hand – it's just a better grip, honestly. And sometimes it's more easier for the quarterback, especially if they have to throw with the laces, if that makes sense. Because I was a guy, I could not throw out without the laces for whatever reason. So it just gives you – so basically when you just throw the ball back like that, it's not a whole bunch of spin on it. So if that makes sense. So the ball is not really spinning a whole bunch, so you can get a better feel for the laces, as opposed to it coming back in a spiral and you really struggling to feel exactly where it is. So that's some things that I've had some previous experiences with. I'm sure they have different reasons for why they're doing it, but maybe it's just more comfortable to him that way.
I'm curious. I'd be interested to go watch his center film from 2 years ago. Do we have center film? No, we don't. No, he was left tackle as a sophomore. Yeah, so, oh, dang. I was wondering if he had switched it up with the new coaching staff. All right, Washington boys, let's start. I want to talk about Nick Harris because I claim Nick Harris. Last year I had to watch Caleb McGarry on the right side, Trey Adams on the left side, and I'm watching the right guard next to Caleb McGarry, well, 51. I'm saying, hey, you know, this guy, oh, that's a nice little, oh, like, hello, you know. And so all of a sudden I sit down and say, all right, this kid's draft eligible. Let me give him a couple days worth of attention. And I really, really enjoyed what I saw out of Nick Harris. Nick Harris, like I said, he's built like a fridge. And so we've got a guy who is 6'1", 305, 310. He's squatty, right? And he's a little bit stubby as well. He does not have the longest reach. But when you're able to get underneath guys, it allows you to get into their pads. And that's what he really likes to play, tough in that, you know, I talked about that 2 foot or that 2x2 box. That's kind of where he loves to play, within a phone booth, within the tight areas of playing guard. He really packs a punch. He's got vice grips for hands. So if you look, like, I've got a report on him on the draftnetwork.com from last year, the Nick Harris player profile. You hear what I say? Squatty, powerful build that holds a lot of power, particularly adept at converting speed to power on poles and when offering help and pass protection, has natural leverage and loves to play over his toes, devastating punisher on lead blocks. This dude is really, really good in a phone booth. Now, he gets too aggressive. He attacks too much. He plays over his feet a little bit too much. And you saw Jalen Jelks, who came out last year, get him a couple times in that way. You saw Ronnell Wren get him a couple times in that way, where they're able to get him forward and then swim over him or lay him and just get him too far over his toes. That's the biggest issue with him right now. But I think he's explosive. I think he's sufficiently quick. I wouldn't call him nimble, but he's sufficiently quick. And then when he gets hands on you, very, very typically, that's a win for Nick Harris. And so there's a lot of attention on Caleb McGarry last year. There's a lot of attention on Trey Adams for the last couple of years. But Nick Harris is a guy who I really think deserves his due in the limelight as an NFL draft-relevant guy. And listen, 2018, I mean, he was the first team center in a conference that had Jake Hansen, who we both talked about and we liked, and Cole Cabral, who people have, you know, some people like him as well. We're not huge fans. So this is a guy who's starting to get rather more attention. I like Nick Harris a lot.
Yeah, and I'm right there with you. And I've had a brief viewing on him, and I actually looked up your report on him just to compare our notes, just to see exactly what we had as strengths and weaknesses. And what I wrote down is he's just a little ball of strength. His leverage, he knows how to use that to his advantage. And you see that a lot of times with shorter guys, to where they don't really understand how to use that naturally low pad level, and they allow guys to get into their chest. And that's something that Nick Harris really does a good job of not allowing guys to get inside of his chest. Now, he does struggle with length from time to time just because he is a shorter guy. So those longer arm defenders are really going to give him troubles from time to time. But his effort is a major plus. That's something that I wrote down in red ink. He plays so hard on every single play, and it just seems like he takes it as a criticism that a lot of people are saying, yeah, he's shorter and maybe he can't hang in there with some of the Pac-12 interior defensive linemen. And he goes out and plays that way because he has that anger, he has that nasty demeanor that you're looking for, vice grips for hands, like you said, a squatty build. And I just love the way he plays determined on every single rep. So it wouldn't surprise me if we're looking up and he's one of the better interior offensive linemen from this entire class.
Yeah, no, and I like the red ink. No, I didn't know that's how you took your notes. So I'm glad that was a red ink note for you.
So, I'm kind of weird with my notes. So yeah. I take like plus and minuses or strengths and weaknesses in different ink so I can go back and it's much easier to read because I have like horrible handwriting.
Oh, dude, we can compare one day and see who can read whose, because mine is atrocious. But no. He's a likable guy. And like I've got a couple years now worth of film on him, and I'm really excited to see him grow into a national spotlight. At times, he reminds me a little bit of what you got out of like a Drew Samia last year in terms of the physicality, the violence, the aggressiveness, a little bit undersized. Samia was probably a better athlete. And I like Samia a fair bit, but Harris is a fun player. Last but not least is a player I feel like we've talked about for 800 years. I feel like Trey Adams has been draft eligible for as long as I can remember, which I think is he a sixth year senior?
Yes, he'll be a 6-year senior this year.
Wow, which wild. And so do you have his injury history? I did not double check this. I know he's injured a lot. Did you bring it up in his bio or should I grab it?
So all I have written down was that he had a torn ACL in 2017 and he had back surgery last September. Those are the only two things that I have on record. Yeah. I'm sure it's been more bumps and bruises throughout his time, but as far as major injuries, those are the only two that I have.
Yeah, it's annoying because there's no good college football injury database, which if you're listening to this podcast and you want a $1 million idea that I would pay so much money for.
Another one, starts. Right. Whoever invents a database for career starts is going to be a millionaire.
Right. You get, and the thing is, like, offensive line is pretty easy, but yeah, when you get these rotational players on these big offenses. But we digress. Trey Adams. Huge, right? The original
big dudes.
There are a lot of big dudes in this class. Trey Adams was the first big. Like, we knew, you know, like I said, we've known him for 3 years now at this point. 6'7", 325. I think he's absolutely massive. He's gathered strength. He's gathered size during his time there, and he came in big. Trey Adams, another guy that I've got notes on up on the site, so you can find my report on him from before last year. When you're his size with good athleticism, with really positive athleticism, we talked about this, Prince Tagovailoa from Auburn, you're able to just recover and win a lot of reps because you're just bigger and faster. Like when I wrote this report, the main thing I wrote about is he's just like, rush plans just don't scare him. Like outside rushes don't worry him. Inside rushes don't worry him. So even if you get him out of position, like he's just going to be able to ride you because he's huge, he's long, and critically, he's quick. I don't think he's super fast. And obviously, I think the explosiveness is potentially getting sapped a little bit by, you know, injuries and the amount of hits that his body has withstood at this point. But an explosive guy, I mean, he's got a great kick slide, keeps a very wide base. I love what he's able to do with his hands at the top of the arc and get in contact with people, push them beyond the peak of the pocket, really neutralizing that rush and giving his quarterback room to step up. Adams has been good for a while. He's continued to be good. He's going to be one of the top tackles in this class. He has to come out this time. And so he's going to be one of the top tackles in this class. We know for a fact. It's a question of how much are you going to be able to invest in a guy who's had multiple season-ending injuries.
Yeah, and I think durability, that's the biggest thing that people are going to worry about with him. He's another guy I'm really hoping that accepts the invitation down at the Senior Bowl. I think he really could help himself and make some money down there, especially with the caliber of defensive linemen that are going to be down there. But as far as where he wins, he has a strong base as anchored. The one thing that I really loved about him was, which is expected from a six-year senior, is that he is so savvy and he's always aware of what's going on. Stunts and twists, the edge pressure, he's able to point it out and decipher it. He didn't play in the Auburn game last year. I really wanted to see him in that game, but during the backstretch when he did play the final three games of the year last year, I believe it was, I thought he looked like his old self. So hopefully he can build off of that in 2019 and be that top-ranked player that a lot of people think he can be.
Yeah, he's going to be such a tricky one to place because, you know, we're going to give our top five offensive linemen that we've watched on Friday, and it's going to be real easy to put Adams high, in my opinion, because he does a lot of things really well, and I think his problems are masked by his blue-chip traits. The thing is, we're grading in a vacuum in June, and then all of a sudden it's going to get close to the draft, and some of these medical reports from the combine are going to come out, and it might be a big fall for him, and you're going to hate to see that. It's a dang shame. And you really respect him fighting to come back for Washington there at the end of the season. You know, he played in some big games for them. Apple Cup, Pac-12 Championship, Ohio State, the bowl game, what have you. It's going to be a sad thing when, you know, when his medicals turn out that he's probably not going to be at 100% health for the rest of his career. But Adams is a good player. Harris is a good player. Williams is a good player. Cole Cabral is also on this list. That was the final group of offensive linemen that we've watched this week. 14 guys that we went through. If there was a name that we didn't get to, trust us, we probably know it, and we're probably sorry. For example, I just learned on Wednesday that Creed Humphrey, the Oklahoma center, is a redshirt sophomore, and I thought it was a true sophomore. Otherwise, we would have watched him.
He was going to be on my top five on Friday.
just throw him on there. Didn't even watch him, but I'm positive he's out there. Creed Humphrey's a good one. If there is a player who you really like who we weren't able to get to watch, you can always hit us up on Twitter. He's at JReedNFL. Reed is R-E-I-D. I'm at Benjamin Solak. Solak is S-O-L-A-K. Fan Friday is the next podcast. By the time you are listening to this, the Fan Friday tweet, which you all set your clocks to, will be up. Maybe we'll have Jordan send it, because this is only Fan Friday, first Fan Friday, maybe last Fan Friday ever. and that's obviously a very exciting pod. You also get on top fives, as we said. But if you have any other questions about offensive linemen, be sure to hit us up. We'll be taking a brief hiatus from the Summer Scouting Series next week, a little bit of time off, bring on some guests, talk about some umbrella, some 50,000-foot stuff as we wait for the defensive scouting reports once Trevor and I both get back from vacation. But that is Jordan. I am Ben. Thank you so much for listening and joining us for Offensive Line Week. Keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.